Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Sam Ness joins me, who's my favorite youthful musician, who played on State Street for a long time and actually went to Scotland and Europe with a guitar and about $8, if I recall. Hello, yeah. Sam. How you doing?
Good.
You just went to Europe. What, how old were you at the time?
18.
18. Yeah. You had how much money in your pocket?
Not much.
I mean, what, $200?
It's something like that, yeah.
$200 in your pocket, went to Scotland, and just lived on that, basically, for a year, right? Just getting tips and... Mm-hmm. You might have had a couple of hundred sent to you from home a couple of times, but not much.
Not a lot.
You went with 10 grand.
No, right.
Now, I'm just curious, before we talk about your new album, on that story about going, did you ever get to the point where you're down to like $5?
Oh, really? Yeah. I spent a couple of days without eating several times.
Were you totally broke at times?
Or? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you just got to go out there and play guitar and hustle the money back.
Yeah.
Right?
When I was hitchhiking to the Hebrides outside of Scotland, I spent the last of my money on a little guitar that I found in a charity shop, and ended up just playing to eat for about a week. So, good times.
Now that you weren't tempted to make money in other ways, I hate to say it, but you know, you're, when you're desperate.
No, it was all part of the adventure. It was fun. So
you remained a gentleman and a good boy the entire trip. I don't want to put you on the spot here. It's kind of like Paul McCartney in Germany in 1960. Good, clean fun. Actually, it was good, dirty fun. Anyway, but you are here because you got your first album.
Yes, sir.
A solo? You have a backup or what's
full
going
band?
On?
Yeah, full band. Full band and strings, horns, the whole works.
Really? How many pieces?
Eight.
Eight in my pieces.
Band. Yeah. So for the show that next week, December 21st, the Hynian Saloon, a week from tomorrow, it'll be with my full 8-piece band.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be on the eve of my Florida trip. Maybe I'll stop by. And so how many horns do you have?
On the record, we've got a full section of trumpet and flugelhorn that we overdubbed. And for the live show, it'll just be one. It'll be played by John DeHaven. He's a really, really wonderful artist, so I'm really lucky to have him on the record and playing live with us, too.
Because you used to just work alone. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
When did you evolve into a piece band?
Yeah, so I started building the band when I started building the record and kind of trying to figure out what I was going to do for that. A year ago, I think I started it the first week of January is when I started this project. Yeah, and I could hear all the different other parts, all the horns and strings and such. So I just started kind of, you know, making my way around the Madison scene and asking people who'd be in.
You write all these songs yourself, or how did this work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did?
Yep.
Wow.
So I wrote all the different parts, and the cool thing about this record is that the full band never even met each other until last week, because we did the drums, bass, guitar, vocals all together. Part of it was in a big barn, and then part of it was in this church too, and then added everything later. So I brought in the cello player and brought in the keys player and just had him listen to everything, and I was like, all right, play whatever you want.
Now you're doing
play.
Vocals on this,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you playing guitar and doing vocals?
Yep. Or? And then I've got a good friend, Maggie Poff, singing harmony as well. So
wow.
And then Skylar Nunn will be playing electric guitar. He played a lot of it on the record and will be joining us for the show, too.
What's the name of the album?
The album's called Whispered on the Wind.
Whispered on the Wind.
Yeah.
Which it kind of has a nice ring to it because, you know, you're only 20, but you kind of have this, shall we say, old soul bond with yesteryear. Is that fair to say? With
I think so.
Folk music or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Americana type music.
That song's in particular, a lot of people have said that it kind of brings them back to what was going on in the 80s and the late 70s with Van Morrison kind of stuff and some artists similar to him. So
I came to know back in the day that women loved Van Morrison songs. When I'd be out with, if I ever had a date, which is shocking, they would want to hear Brown Eyed Girl and Moondance.
Yeah.
Moondance? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Nirvana at that point. I don't know why Sam Morrison was such an attractive artist for females, but he was.
Yeah.
So if you just do his cover, she'll be fine.
Yeah. I get his stuff requested quite a bit at shows, and he's one of those artists that, you know, unless you can play it just as good or better, don't do it.
Yeah,
I haven't started.
Well, he did have a unique style. Yeah. You're right about that, because, you know, you want to. So what's the goal? What you want to have this sell millions, and we'll see you on late night shows and the whole thing? Or?
Well, I guess, yeah, we'll see with that. My goal was really just when I was traveling Europe, I had a lot of these songs written, and I've always heard them full band. And some of the songs I wrote in Europe, too, and when I came back, that was my goal almost 3 years ago now, 2 years ago, I guess, was to come back and make this record. And when I first got out, I was just focused on getting back into the scene, you know, doing a lot of busking and catching up with friends and coming back to this American lifestyle. But mm-hmm. Now that I kind of settled into it, it was all focused into this record. So,
Are you happy to just be based out of Madison for a while, or do you want to just take the plunge and go to Nashville or L.A. or, you know, whatever the case may be?
I'll be flying into Auckland, New Zealand next month. So
for a show, for a concert?
For a wedding, actually.
For a wedding?
Yeah, some friends that I met when I was hitchhiking in Scotland invited me to come play in their wedding.
Really?
So I'll be flying in. Their wedding is in a few months, but I'm going to spend some time out there hitchhiking and playing in the street and promoting this record out there.
Does that
too
sound cool? I'm looking at my engineer, Sam awesome Brockerfeld, who's in his early 30s. But why is it? It sounds fantastic just to, you know, go to New Zealand, hang out for a couple of months, you know, bond with the sheep. Now, you got your guitar, so
yeah,
you play something from the album, even though we don't have the other pieces? But
yeah, I got this new Traveler guitar, so still getting used to it. It's a little guy for when I go out. But
Sam Ness, who's the future superstar that we, you know, once State Street performer, now, of course, if they haven't changed the rules yet, have they? We're still working on that.
We're still working on that, yeah.
All right. In the meantime, what are you playing?
This is Whispered on the Wind, the title track.
Whispered on the Wind. How about that? Go ahead, Sam.
Something I'd forgotten. It was whispered in the wind, bringing smells of pine, cold feeling on my skin. There's a feeling I'd forgotten, but when the sunshine hit my face, I closed my eyes, I just realized, listen to the rocking of the waves. Now it's all coming back to me. You have to close your eyes to see. Sometimes silence teaches all that we could need, but it's coming back to me. It's coming back to me. There's something I was reminded when the sunset turned to stars. Everything so quiet, no trains, no planes, no cars. My dad and I were fishing, sharing stories of the road. I turned to him and I say, Dad, it's good to be back home. Now it's all coming back to me. You have to close your eyes to see. Sometimes silence teaches all that we could need, but it's coming back to me. It's coming back to me. Thank you. it's all coming back to me. You have to close your eyes to see. Sometimes silence teaches all that we could need, but it's coming back to me. It's coming back to me. It's coming back to me. It's coming back to me.
Sam Ness, very impressive. From his album, Whispered in the Wind.
Yeah, Whispered on the Wind.
Whispered on the Wind. I got the wrong preposition. But it was really nice. It has that folky Americana feel, and you're a young guy, so you're like a third of the age or a fourth of the age of people that did that back in the day.
I hear a little Ryan Adams, you know, right?
Yeah, I've heard that one as well. Yeah.
I think it's the cadencing, like with the stops. Yeah. That's a lot of it. Yeah, it's cool.
Mike Breckenfeld, our engineer, who also plays guitar, and I've seen in the afternoon just strumming away for long periods of time, so they're bonding on the air here. But any questions for Sam, give us a call at 210-1667, 210-1667. So you're still based out of Madison. Are you in Sauk Prairie, or is that your...
Yeah, I'm based in Madison
area. Madison now.
Yeah. So I play mostly around now, I guess, around southern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin. But I make it down through Madison quite a bit now.
How much are you working? I mean, are you booked?
See, it's slowing down a little bit now as I'm getting closer to traveling. But throughout the summer, it was between 20 and 23, 24 shows a month. So
24 shows a month will do it.
Yeah, it kept me on my toes.
So you're just booking your own gigs with calling the bars, or how?
Yeah, just calling people and just stopping in places with my guitar and saying, hey, here's a song, check it out, and if you like it, I'll come back and play a show.
You know, this grown-up world of, you know, high, fast living, bank accounts and bills and, I think you've got it made, Sam. So just stay 20. I think, am I right, Mike? Is that the way to go?
That's a pretty good idea.
Just bring your guitar in and just drop it on the bus. I mean, I think a lot of people watching you are probably much older, envious of your lifestyle.
Oh, I think age is a state of mind. I think that if there's one thing that I've learned, I've met a lot of people well into their 50s, 60s. Met a couple of guys that were in their 70s traveling that seemed a lot younger than I am.
Carefree.
Yeah.
Footloose and fancy free.
Yeah. I mean, there was...
That's impressive. I mean, to me, that's truly an enviable, if that's a word, trait.
Yeah. There was a fella named Roland, a German fella that I ate dinner with every night in a hostel in Lisbon in Portugal. And he and I would just sit and talk all night. And he was absolutely had just this youthful, you know, childness about him.
Yeah.
And it was just really beautiful. I think he was in his late 60s, early 70s.
Really?
So,
German guy, huh?
Yeah. So,
well,
if he's listening, shout out to
him. I managed to remain immature my whole life. I never really grew up. You can talk to my ex-wife about that. But, no, I mean, that's true. I always say if you can't grow up by the time you're 40, it's not in the cards. It's not in the cards. But there is a lot of truth to that. I mean, you know, because you are playing music and a big burden by, realism and real, you know, the commercial world can be a drag. You know, what do you need? You got, you know, you're actually a full-time musician. You can live just off your gigs. Part of that is Harry Chapin, who was a folk singer far before your time, used to say that his grandfather once told him, when you work for somebody else and you work for other people's agendas, you really can't sleep well at night when you fight the good fight. Whatever that fight may be, but if you believe in that fight, you can sleep. I'm sure you can sleep pretty well, Sam.
Rarely. I rarely sleep as a musician.
You don't sleep because you're working.
No, exactly. I rarely get to sleep. But but that's all right, too.
You're writing all the time, you work a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, you know, especially playing up around Minnesota, there's a lot of driving. So
right.
A lot of driving, and when I come
back. Well, I think in Minnesota, I think Hibbing, Minnesota, wasn't that Bob Dylan? Hibbing, Minnesota? I think he's from there, actually.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that. He's about 75 or 80 now. But in any event, so that's amazing, too. But But again, I mean, a lot of people who are musicians have to have other jobs, and they play, you know, weekends once a month or whatever the case. But you don't have to do that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's something that's really beautiful about this scene, though, in Madison, that there are, you know, kind of the weekend warriors, and they have made a scene for that here.
That's true, yeah.
And that kind of takes away the really the competition part of it, where, you know, you go to L.A. or Nashville or a lot of the bigger cities, everyone's trying to crawl over each other to get that paid gig or get that next step. But here, everyone's so supportive because everyone's doing it for the love of music.
Well, it's your first album, so... You don't have an agent, right? So you're your own agent right now?
Or? I do work with a booking agent.
You do?
Out of
Chicago. Well, in terms of recording, in terms of getting it, you know, on the charts or on the, you know, whatever the case may be, Americana folk. I mean, how would you describe your genre?
That's something we've been having a hard time with. Somewhere between when I was getting everything registered for iTunes and Spotify, it said pick two genres and then subgenres. So I think I went with alternative folk and Americana country.
Well, you know, you got to find your niche in these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the day of the podcast and little earplugs for your phone. I mean, that's kind of what it is. People find what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're on iTunes, you're on, you know, iHeart apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tune in. I mean, that's where you want to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that won't be available until probably mid to late January. But, yeah, the record will be on there.
Next month. Well, no, did you hear a hit there? I think, was that a hit, you think, possible hit, that first song,
yeah,
Mike?
That's great.
I liked it. I liked it. I mean, you know, what the heck? I like that, close your eyes to see. Is that what the line
was?
Which is so true in so many respects, right? I mean, people can't see their eyes wide open, right? And no, I just, you know, here I am 56, realizing, where'd my youth go? You know, we were all 20 once. But no, it's fantastic, and we wish you the best of luck in the... The show is next Thursday?
Yes.
At High Noon Saloon?
Yeah.
What time is the show?
Doors at 7, and then we've got a writer's round at 7:30 with Katie Scullin, Toss Hopkins, Shondell Marks, and Luke Jorgensen. And they all play in a bunch of other bands, too. Yeah, they're really great. I know, yeah, Luke Jorgensen is with the Lower Fifth. Toss Hopkins is part of King Leopard. Katie Scullin, I believe she has a band. I don't know what...
yeah, she's been on the show before here.
Yep. Yeah,
very
she's
talented,
wonderful.
Very talented. Were you going to the Mamas last summer? Were you involved in that at all, the Madison Area Music Awards?
A little bit. I wasn't super involved. I'm going to try to be more involved this year. I competed in the Breakthrough Artist Competition this year, so that was fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
That was a few weeks back. And the Mamas Awards are coming up pretty quick again this year, and
you know we were up last year, Mike, for like promoting music. I don't think we won. I never got anything in the mail. So, but anyway, it's a great organization, really is.
It is.
Fantastic stuff. How about a break? Then we'll come back and make one more song, Sam. Or what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Sam Ness, future superstar. But even if he's not, he's a great musician who doesn't have to work at another job, which to me means he's winning. And this is the Mitch Hinks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Sam Ness, our guest, no relation to Elliot Ness from the Untouchables, but you probably know the reference. See, that's how old I am, but anyway, look it up, the movie, very good. Anyway, so you got a song from your album?
Yes, sir.
Give me the name of it. On the Whispered Wind.
This is a song called Comfort Grace, and we actually just released the music video for this, too. So if people are listening and want to check that out, if you just go to YouTube and search Sam Ness, Come for Grace, you can find that.
Come for Grace or Comfort Grace?
Come for
Grace. Come for Grace. Yeah. There you go. Sam Ness, take it away.
Again, the path ahead splits in two. This is how it ends. This time it's not up to you. I have my faults, and I've made my failures, but I see my chance. This is how it ends. And I stood there at the edge of the world with my arms outstretched, and I laid bare my chest, and I yelled with all my heart, I've come for grace. I've come for grace. I see upcoming challenges. I tighten my bandages. I march one foot in front of the other. Who I was, who I will be, changes now. It changes now. And I stood there at the edge of the world with my arms outstretched, and I laid bare my chest, and I yell with all my heart, I've come for grace. I've come for grace. I am unclean. There's something down that road I haven't seen. There's something down that trail moves me on, leads me home. And I am cold. There's something in that wind that warms my soul. There's something down that trail that I need to make me clean. And I stood there at the edge of the world with my arms outstretched, and I laid bare my chest, and I yelled with all my heart, I've come for grace. I've come for grace. And I stood there at the edge of the world with my arms outstretched, and I laid bare my chest, and I yell with all my heart, I've come for grace.
Sam Ness, Comfort Grace, from his new album. Give me the name of the album one more time.
Whispered on the Wind.
Whispered on the Wind. It's just great stuff. It's just got that nice Americana folky type feel to it, which is kind of exciting because, you know, I mean, AC/DC has its place. Black Sabbath has its place, but so does Sam have a place, you know. And you got a show next Thursday, album breakout party? Is that what's going on? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so not only do we have the writer's round with Katie Scullin, Toss Hopkins, Luke Jorgensen, Shondell Marks, we've got Old Soul Society playing after that. Derek Romnerace is the head of that band, and then me and my band will be playing too.
Very humbly put, sharing the wealth, that's good. High Noon Saloon, and you're on stage at 8 o'clock next week, right? Next Thursday?
Show will start at about 7:30, so we'll be on a bit later than that.
A bit later, okay. Yeah. Well, they're all great artists
have to come.
And whole thing. So just come to the show and have fun. I may do that and just go to Florida the next day and see my kids. Sam reminds me of my son, who's older than Sam by 5 years. It's amazing how these things happen. But in any event, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Wish you the very best of luck. And, you know, the kid's got talent, man. So go check out his show and buy his. When will the album or the CD or the be available?
So the physical discs will be available right at the show, the 21st.
At the show.
Yep.
And then to buy it then, you go to what?
To buy the disc from the internet, you can get the physical disc or get the MP3 stream download towards the end of January.
Go to samness.com or?
It'll be through iTunes. So if you search Sam Ness on iTunes, it should come up.
Sam Ness on iTunes, or if you want the physical disc, go to what?
For the physical disc, those will be available through cdbaby.com.
cdbaby.com. How about that? There you go. Sam, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
So, hey, thanks for coming in. We got John Nichols. That's right, John Nichols himself coming up with his new book. He'll talk about Trump. He'll talk about everything that's important in the world. Nothing more important than music, though, we should point out. The Mid-Tank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
New Mitch Hank Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Welcome to the Mitch Hank Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on The Mitch Hank Show.
John Nichols, longtime columnist for the Capital Times, The Nation magazine, author. Hello, Mr. Nichols.
Hello, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. And you are celebrating the 100th birthday of the Capital Times. Even though you are not 100, we should point out.
Not quite 100, but we are celebrating the 100th. In fact, right about now, it was an afternoon paper, and Mr. Evue rolled the presses down on King Street.
Wow.
Late in the afternoon on December 13th, 1917, and lo and behold, he had a newspaper.
That's amazing stuff. And he was probably motivated by the whole La Follette thing and the progressive movement. I mean, obviously, right?
Without a doubt, Evue was the best newspaper man ever to come through Madison by any measure. He was hired to be the managing editor for the Wisconsin State Journal, and he was so good at running a newspaper that they moved him from the editing side over to be the general manager, the guy who ran the whole operation at the State Journal. And he was very successful. He was also in politics. He was a state representative, and he probably would have stayed at the State Journal forever. But the State Journal, with the dawn of World War I, turned against La Follette, became a rabidly reactionary pro-war newspaper. And Abbey thought that was offensive, disgusting.
He's against the war, then. Was he against the war?
I think, like any rational person, he was against World War I. But he was, it wasn't just an anti-war stance. I mean, it was also a sense that the State Journal had become really kind of a vile newspaper. It was attacking La Follette for La Follette's anti-war stance, and it was also kind of stirring up the business community to be anti-La Follette, stirring up proposals to have La Follette expelled from the U.S. Senate. La Follette was burned in effigy on the UW campus. And so things were getting very ugly, and mm-hmm. Ebbie decided to go out and start a newspaper that would defend freedom of speech in wartime, defend dissent, and also oppose war profiteering. And one of the first things the Capital Times did was call out local businesses that were profiting off World War I. That didn't make them immensely popular with the business community, but it was a well-received expose by the rest of the town.
Sure it was, and he lived until what, the early 70s? Or?
Yeah, he died the day after Earth Day in 1970. So he saw the arc of history from World War I to the midst of the Vietnam War.
Now, if I recall, we're talking about William Evue, right? That he didn't like JFK because he didn't vote to censor Joe McCarthy. Was that the case?
He thought that there's no question. Like a lot of Wisconsin liberals and progressives, they had a problem with JFK because they thought JFK was a little soft on McCarthy, and that is certainly in 1960. Ebbie was, by that point, a very, very influential figure. He had helped to found the Wisconsin Progressive Party and then led a lot of progressives into what was the modern Democratic Party. And so Kennedy really tried to get Ebbie's support. He came to Ebbie's house. He sent Ebbie notes. He did everything he could to try to get a Cap Times endorsement. But that never came in the primary. However, the one thing that's worth noting is that as Kennedy's presidency began to unfold, Evue began to like him, you know, a good deal more, have more respect and regard for him. And so when Kennedy was assassinated, Evue and the Cap Times really mourned, I think, maybe even at a more intense level than some other publications. So in the end of the day, that distrust of Kennedy did kind of fade away.
That's it. Now tell me about the book before we get into Alabama in 2018. What about your book?
Well, the book, which just came out yesterday, is called The Capital Times, and it's a story of, as it says in the subtitle, a proudly radical newspaper's century-long fight for justice and for peace. And that was Mr. Evue's great phrase, that the Capital Times would always be for justice and for peace. And it's a history of the paper, but it's not told in the traditional sense. Dave Zwiefel and I wrote it, and what we did was we took eight issues, eight areas of focus that the paper was very passionate about, and wrote the story of those struggles. So there's a chapter on the fight against Joe McCarthy, which the Cap Times was involved in for the better part of 15 years, a chapter on its opposition to wars, a chapter on its support for civil rights, a chapter on its involvement with Madison and you know, all the great issues of Madison. So in many ways, it's a history of Madison and Wisconsin during the 20th century into the 21st through the lens of a daily newspaper. So it was a pleasure to write, and we were very lucky. We've gotten some lovely reviews and some great blurbs, and so it seems to be going well.
You guys always remained idealistic and romantic about what government can do. And I had that when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I didn't become a cynical curmudgeon until later, but still, I mean, it did happen. You guys never let that happen to you.
No, you're from Indiana, Mitch. You know?
No, I was a Gary Hart delegate. I went door to door for McGovern when I was 9. I mean, it wasn't that. I mean, I just...
Well, we have high regard for you. But,
I became cynical.
If you're from rural Wisconsin and you see the great struggles of this state, you know, you have to maintain a faith. My great-grandfather was the village president of Blue River, Wisconsin, population about 300.
Arch rivals of Columbus, right?
No, not actually. Blue River's over in the western part of the state.
Oh, okay.
Not far from Muscadet in Boston.
Oh, I see. I'm screwed up on my geography.
Don't worry. But you know, he was, from 1900 to 1937, he was the village president. And he was such a devoted supporter of the progressive movement that they renamed the main street La Follette. And so that's what I come from. And Dave, the same way. Dave grew up in New Glarus.
Right.
And he literally grew up reading the Cap Times as a kid. So, you know, for us, the Cap Times, the progressive movement of this state, really the kind of arc of history in Wisconsin is something very precious. And we maintain a faith in it because we love our state.
Yes.
We don't want to see it degenerate.
You romantically hold on to the notion that government is a vehicle for social and economic justice, where some of us came to think government could be a real nuisance along the way.
Yeah, but that's just the silly Reagan blathering. Whoa, you know,
Reagan.
The fact of the matter is that corporations will screw you over twice as fast as government and take twice as much from you. And we don't like government for the sake of government. We like government because it's something that ideally we can control.
Ideally,
we can't control a multinational corporation that pollutes our water, that, you know, harms our workers, that you know, abandons us, you know, in favor of some profit they can make overseas. But government is the extension of the people. So, of course, we prefer, you know, and anything that's democratic, that's small-d democratic, that allows people to have a say in their lives. And, you know, so you might equate that with some sort of, you know, romantic affiliation with government. It's not that. It's a romantic affiliation with democracy. And tragic that in America today, respect for democracy is probably at the lowest point it's been in, you know, through the history of the American experiment. But there are some of us, you know, patriots who still believe.
Well, no, I've been a paid government apparatchik, John. I saw the dark side.
Yeah, but you worked for Jim Doyle.
Well, I don't want to name names. I just saw him last week. He's doing well. But one becomes aware of the 24/7 need for money and campaign contributions and political
that's
moves.
Corruption.
What's that?
That's corruption.
Well, yeah. It's also reality because, you know, you need so much money to run.
Yeah, but that's corruption. It doesn't matter whether it's reality. There are plenty of places in the world where corruption is a reality. And the important thing to understand is that the reliance on money is corruption. It's as Russ Feingold, another believer in the Wisconsin.
But if you want to win, John, you have to raise the money.
You know what? Yeah, but if you sell your soul, then you may win, but you've won nothing. You mean nothing. You'll be forgotten to history. You know, Scott Walker will only be remembered as a mistake.
Well, give me a before we get to Trump and all that. Give me a president.
Money.
Yeah,
he extended from money, not from a faith in what this state could be. So, you know, I mean, I'm. It's,
well, he has a he and conservatives. Me. You would acknowledge that he and conservatives have a belief in low taxes and small government. Of course, I don't know how small a government is. I mean, it's probably the same size as it
was. Scott Walker has a belief in finding $3 billion to give to a Taiwanese corporation so he can run campaign ads. That's not conservative, and that's not belief.
Well, that's money.
There's nothing principled or idealistic about that. That's, you know, crass, you know, career politician trying to save.
Well, you would you not suggest concede that it doesn't come out of GPR? I mean, that's $3 billion they wouldn't have to pay if they come. I mean, if they don't come, that's not $3 billion they're getting. It's a brick.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if Scott Walker had ever bothered...
I mean, it's not sitting in a fund over in the general budget.
If Scott Walker had ever bothered to read, you know, 2 pages of information about where the technological revolution is going, mm-hmm. he'd know that investing a dollar in a flat-screen TV plant is one of the dumbest things you can do. And Foxconn is scared that Donald Trump is going to erect trade barriers. So they want to come to the United States, but they're not sending their best technology here or their biggest ideas. They're sending a plant that is going to make a soon-to-be-outdated technology. They'll collect their $3 billion. They'll actually hire a bunch of people and set up a plant, collect their $3 billion. They'll quickly automate it with robotics. And then in relatively rapid fashion, they will leave. They will shut it down because it's not going to be making something that people want
anymore. Well, they won't collect the $3 billion if they do that because there are strings attached.
Watch the timelines on this, brother.
No, I'm not trying to defend the regime. I'm just saying that I've read the whole thing, and they have to do, you know, X to get the money. They have to do X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then once they've done X, you know, that's the fantasy of economic development, right? You know, they do X, and you tell yourself, oh, wow, you know, so we made this, and now we got them locked in here. No. They will be gone, and they will leave the second they can with
okay.
the money.
But getting back to and that, go ahead. The
just
government,
to tell you, it's Foxconn is one of the – it is a remarkably well-named project because the word con is
– Well, time will tell. Getting back to that curmudgeon thing, as a small business person – and I talked to my aunt, who's a professor at IU, and my other aunt, who's a retired teacher, and my mother was a retired teacher, and they all hate Trump, and they hate Republicans. And I said, well, I shell out for, you know, the payroll tax and, you know, employees. I shell out for that stuff. They, you know, so they proceed to say that businesses are evil, and I go, well, you know, thanks a lot. You know.
Nobody's saying business is evil. They're just saying that, you know, a lot of us like the old school Wisconsin businesses that knew how to make it without a handout, right?
Nobody gave us a handout. I mean, you know,
well, so Foxconn was looking for $3 billion.
All right. Well, I'm not Foxconn. What I'm saying is, there is a cultural conflict at times between people who are like, you know, small fledgling businesses with this juggernaut that puts everybody in the same boat. You know.
Well. You know what? The Capital Times started out as a small fledgling business with a very little amount of money, took on a lot bigger institutions, was attacked, had a really rough time of it, became very successful, so successful now that it has a foundation that it gives away money to the community, the EBU Foundation. And, you know, the interesting thing is that EBU did that the whole way for 100 years, condemning multinational corporations and big business. You know why? Because the fact of the matter is that you can run an honest business, make a lot of money, do very well, succeed, and you know, build yourself up, do something. But if you're in a situation where the kind of the frame of things is defined by multinational corporations and big business, small business is always going to be left behind. It's always going to be harmed. And this is the thing to understand. It shocks me when small farmers and small business people feel they have something in common with, you know, corporations that are headquartered in Taipei or, you know, that are, you know, like prancing around the world, you know, with investors parking their money in the Cayman Islands. I mean, you know, this is an absurdity. And, you know, there are some of us who actually believe in a genuine free market, right, where there's honest competition. And the truth of the matter is you can only have that if you stop giving it all away to the big guys.
Yeah, but if you're going
so
off...
Don't blame government. Do not ever... Don't blame government.
No, but if you're going offshore to avoid the taxes, that's why they go offshore to a large extent. I mean, Apple went to Ireland, not because the rate was 12%, John, because it was 2% when they went there. There was a honeymoon.
Right, because they're... No, because they don't... Their loyalty... to the place they're from, to the country there they grew up, to the country that gives them their profits, is so low that they would sell it off They would bid it off.
Well, because 2% is a better rate, John. That's what it is,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, we could talk about Tom Pockett's plan.
I have put my money in banks that sometimes didn't have the best rates because they were responsible banks that invested in our community. Right? Because
no, I admire your nobility on that.
It's nothing noble. That's what a good person used to be. That's what an honorable person used to be before the days of Roy Moore politics and Donald Trump.
Yes, we'll get to that. But I refer you to the late Paul Tsongas' book, A Call to Economic Arms, as he talked about being an economic patriot along those lines. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Although he sounded like Elmer Fudd, I'll concede, and didn't look great in a Speedo.
That, yeah.
Now, Roy Moore loses, but he lost by 2 points. He's an accused pedophile. He was kicked off the Alabama Supreme Court twice. He said all kinds of things about slavery and gays, and he still lost by 2 points. So, I mean, what do we make from that?
Well, it's a sad story. You know, look, Roy Moore was probably the worst candidate in the history of American politics. I mean, can you, and Mitch, I have immense respect for you as somebody who knows a good deal about political history. Can you ever think of anybody worse? I mean, anything where you had a package that was more, you know, offensive than Roy Moore?
Lester Maddox? Lester Maddox,
well,
George Wallace.
You know, Lester Maddox was a...
Curtis
really
LeMay.
Well, yeah, you know, they're all bad players, I'll give you that. But, I mean... Were any of them accused of child molestation?
I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm just telling you, I think Roy Moore, you know, kind of tops that competition.
Well, Bill had accusers going back to Oxford. I mean, our friend Bill Clinton,
remember, I'm probably the biggest critic you'll find.
No, I understand,
Clinton,
yeah.
Right? Because of his economics.
But aren't we...
almost Republican.
Yes, aren't we tribal, though, when it comes to... We don't like... We hate the predators when they're on the other side, don't we? I mean, we tend to defend our own predators. Isn't that what happens?
I don't know about that. I think... I hope not.
I see it every day. I mean, you know, you talk to a Republican...
But that's those are just pathetic people. That pathetic death.
I'm talking family members. You know, I asked my sister. I said, "Well, do you believe Juanita Broderick?" She was interviewed by Lisa Myers. Who said Bill raped her in '78, and she did the interview. And my sister said, "Yeah, I believe her, but she shouldn't have gone to that hotel room."
That's a terrible thing to say.
Well, no, but she was defending Bill. The point is, I love my sister, but she was defending Bill.
Yeah. Well, but that's your law. You know, this is just the sad case of politics, right? You know, I mean, people, you know why people get tribal like that, as you say, using this term tribal?
Yes.
It's because politicians, by and large, don't say anything that matters. They don't take stands that matter. They don't have principles. They're not very smart. And it's painful to listen to American politicians.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so many of them are so very, very lame, you know, just mentally undeveloped.
All right, let's cut to the chase, though, John.
Yeah.
What about 2018? A lot of Republican seats, I think over 20 or... No, Democratic seats. Democratic seats have to defend, including people in Trump states like Joe Donnelly in Indiana and Manchin in West Virginia. And so, but yet Democrats are talking about a tsunami, and they're going to win 24 seats in the House in gerrymandered districts. So tell me how this tsunami is going to happen.
Well, I think they should be a little bit smarter about politics. Look, there are a few things that could happen that could create a landslide year for Democrats, a wave year for Democrats, but they haven't all happened yet. And so I think people should be very, very careful. If Trump were to fire Mueller, something like that, yes, of course, you know, then you'd get to the next stage. But, you know, at this point, what I would suggest is Democrats are going to have a better circumstance than maybe they expected right after the 2016 election. Trump has been an absolute disaster of a president. Paul Ryan is not able to manage.
Okay, go ahead. And I'll do the
House of Congress.
Finish and I'll do the Team Trump rejoinder.
These guys are not good at what they do, and so as a result, Democrats may do very well. But the map still favors Republicans. It's just what past elections you're playing off, and so I think we're a little short of a tsunami situation right now. What I would suggest is that Democrats are probably going to have, after Alabama, a much better chance of recruiting candidates, and as such, they'll have a better quality of candidates. One of the things to understand is the reason that Doug Jones won in Alabama is because, A, he was a better person than Roy Moore, B, he was clearly a sharper, more together person who had better experience, who was able to serve as a senator. And you know, this
what about Republican women, John? Don't forget about Republican women in the suburbs. They didn't vote for him.
Didn't vote for Roy Moore.
Roy Moore.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, by and large, you know, you take a look at it. Roy Moore got over 60% of the white women's vote. So, by and large, they voted for
enough
him.
Didn't vote for him. Enough.
They voted for him. What?
1.5 voted. Wrote in somebody. 1.5%.
That doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. You know, look. The bottom line is that African American voters, young voters,
right. 87%
came out and voted passionately for the future.
No question, but I still think there was subdued turnout with suburban educated women. Anyway,
without
John,
a doubt,
you just rattled off the disaster for Trump. Here's the Karl Rove rejoinder. 85 record closings on the Dow since Election Day. 17-year low at unemployment. Increase in labor participation rate, and 401ks are swimming. The stock market has gone up in value by $6 trillion, which is good 401ks. So they're going to rattle that out.
And it's not a bad argument. Look, I think, you know, the fact of the matter is Richard Nixon would have completed his second term if the economy had been going great.
The economy is going very favorably right now, John.
It is, and that's going to be beneficial to some extent to the Republicans.
So when you say they don't know what they're doing, are you talking about just running North Korea and the, you know, doing the tweets?
No, in the economy. They don't know what they're doing on the economy.
Really?
Do you really believe that the stock market is high because our economy is good?
No, I understand that, but when you have GDP GDP growth has gone up the last two quarters by over 3.1, 3.3, which never happened in consecutive quarters in the previous 32 quarters. So, I mean, that's the average GDP growth under...
Well, they'll run on that.
Well, the average GDP growth under the predecessor was 1.8%.
The predecessor was handed a global economic crisis.
I know, and historically, the most
robust
recoveries happen after that.
Yeah.
After the more severe...
Franklin Roosevelt. It didn't happen for Franklin Roosevelt or Harry Truman. They struggled. It doesn't happen immediately. There's no economic history that says that.
Well, I guess World War II...
That's a fantasy to suggest that you somehow get the most robust recovery. That's silly. It doesn't happen. It's not how it works.
One after 1921. You actually...
1921 was a post-war recovery after massive diseases. You know, you had the incredible outbreak of the Spanish flu and all sorts of other things. As that eased, you had an economic upturn. You know, like, I mean... You got to know. I know you do, but we should be careful about these politicians running around who know zero history, who know nothing about economics or about how things work. And the fact of the matter is our economy is doing pretty well right now. But I would be very cautious. You know, take a look at what the polls show. Mm-hmm. How happy are people about the economy?
Well,
they're not. They don't feel very good because we've ripped our unions apart. We've undermined domestic manufacturing. So we have an economic boom when we create a lot of jobs. We're not doing it. It's not like in 1958 or even 1972. What we've got now is a much, much weaker economy. You cannot have a great, strong economy unless you have strong unions, unless you have a really strong mixed economy with a lot of planning. We don't have that. And so you notice that people are still... in polling, scared, uncertain, often very unhappy. And so I think some of the traditional measures which say, oh, you know, the stock market's up.
Right.
You've got these GDP things. I don't know whether they're going to play quite as well in 2018 as they might have, you know, in 1954 or 1970s.
Well, actually, the recession in 58 and 72.
Well, 58? Oh, no, I'm saying 54 for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is the 58 recession, which, by the way, came after a landslide win for Dwight Eisenhower in 56.
Well, you know, you were a Bernie fan. Bernie wanted a 52% top marginal rate, which is what they have in Denmark, by the way, which I'm sure was attractive to a lot of people.
One of the happiest countries in the world.
They have 7 million people. They don't really spend much on defense, but Americans.
So tell me something that would make me not want to do it. That sounds great, right?
You know, well,
we've got more people, but I'd like to spend, you know, a little less on the Pentagon.
Right. Well, what do we spend about $650 billion on the Pentagon? I don't think the Danes have to do that.
I'm with Rand Paul on that one, man.
Oh, there you go. Well, you've always fought the fight and walked the walk and talked the talk, and the book, The Capital Times, was proudly radical newspaper fight for justice and peace. Do I get it right?
You're very good, sir, and it makes a fine holiday gift.
A fine holiday gift, and you and Zweifel never sold out from your boyhood ideology, which I find admirable, if not perplexing, but there you have it.
That's good. I think that's a wonderful description, admirable yet perplexing.
As JFK would say, he was suspicious of the liberals, you know, Adlai Stevenson and Hubert Humphrey.
Muscular
democracy.
I was suspicious of all those guys.
You weren't even alive, probably.
I was a baby, man.
1960?
My suspicions were...
How old were you in 1960, by the way?
Well, I'm afraid I was more in the developmental stages.
2 years old? Yeah.
No, I was younger than that.
Oh, my God.
But I still, you know, 1960, I had my favorites. I would have voted for Kennedy over Nixon.
Yes, you probably would have. Well, anyway, John, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Good luck with the book.
Thank you,
My
sir.
Best is Zweifel. How's Zweifel's hip?
Doing good. He's coming back. He was at the event last night. We had hundreds of people out, and Zweifel wore himself up signing copies of the book.
All right. Keep up the fighting. Thank you very much,
Thanks,
John.
Thanks, brother.
All right,
it's a
take
total
care.
Pleasure to be with you.
All right, appreciate
Strong
it very much.
Good.
Thank you. John Nichols of the Capital Times. He's a little left of me, but I like talking to him. Thanks for listening to the show. All of our guests, Sam Ness was here, and the guy who wrote Trump and God, which is named Steve Shrink or Steve something, that was fascinating. And, of course, Phil Blackwell on baking the gay cake, which we enjoyed very much. Thanks to Mike Brockenfeld, our engineer. We thank Bob Keller, the Keller Real Estate Group, for the space here on West Washington Avenue. Check out his properties, Washington Court, Tuscan Place, Whitcomb Square. Thank you very much. Bob Abella next, Wide World of Radio. See you next week.